Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something that really affects so many people, so many families. It's all approach to drugs.
Right. We're asking, is this war on drugs we've been fighting for decades actually working? Or is there maybe a better way, a more, compassionate and effective path?
Exactly. And to explore that, we've really dug into the work of Christina Dent. She founded End It for Good.
Yeah, her book Curious, her talks, they're fascinating. She challenges a lot of assumptions about drug policy, about the human cost.
So our mission today is really to pull out those key insights, maybe offer you a different way to think about this whole complex issue.
Mm-hmm. Different lens, you could say.
Okay, so let's start with, the reality right now.
Mm.
The stats that End It for Good highlights, they're pretty sobering.
They really are. Like 1 in 10 American adults reporting recent illegal drug use.
1 in 10.
Yeah.
And that number's doubled in the last 20 years.
It doubled, yeah. And maybe the most shocking statistic is that drug overdose is now the number one cause of accidental death in the U.S.
Wow. And that's fueled by the unregulated market, right? The underground stuff.
Almost entirely, which connects to the cost, the financial side of this. We're talking over $1 trillion spent over the years.
$1 trillion on the criminal justice approach.
Right. And like you said, drug use hasn't gone down. It's gone up.
So where is that money actually going?
Well, that's another staggering part. It's incredibly lopsided. Something like 90%, 90, goes to enforcement. You know, police, arrests, prisons.
And only 10% for prevention and treatment.
Just 10%, yeah. And Christina Dent argues this focus on criminality, it doesn't just fail. It actually creates what she calls a chain reaction of harm.
A chain reaction of harm. Okay, unpack that. Her core argument is pretty bold, isn't it? That most of the harm comes from criminalization. Not the drugs themselves.
It is bold, but she makes a compelling case. She draws this parallel to alcohol prohibition back in the 20s.
Right, 1920 to 1933.
Yeah. So what happened then? You had regulated businesses selling alcohol, paying taxes, then boom, prohibition hits.
And suddenly it's Al Capone and the gangs running things. Unregulated, untaxed, violent.
Exactly. That's the market harm. Prohibition created the market for organized crime. Today, she says, it's the same thing with drugs. A $500 billion global illegal industry funding cartels, gangs.
Okay, that makes sense. That's the market harm. What else?
Then there's substance harm. Think about prohibition again. Bootleg liquor, right? You didn't know what was in it. Potency all over the place. Contaminant.
People went blind, died from bad alcohol.
Precisely. And now we see that horrifically mirrored with fentanyl. It's contaminating everything in the illegal market because there's no regulation, no quality control. The black market fills the void, but dangerously.
The market harm, substance harm. And the third was consumer harm. This sounds like the direct impact on the person using drugs.
Yeah, and this is where it gets really heartbreaking. It's about treating people as criminals instead of patients.
So arrest, incarceration.
Right. And being locked up is incredibly traumatic, not just for the person, but for their family, their kids. It breaks bonds, isolates people.
And then the criminal record follows them forever. Jobs, housing.
Exactly. It cripples their ability to rebuild a life. And here's the terrible irony. That trauma, that lack of opportunity, those are huge risk factors for more drug use, for relapse.
So the system actually pushes people back into the cycle it claims to be stopping?
It often does. The recidivism rates are terrible. Something like 70% rearrested within 3 years for drug offenses. And think about the resources.
You mentioned Mississippi spending $68 million just housing non-violent drug offenders.
$68 million, just one state. Meanwhile, nationally, police solve only about half of reported violent crimes, murders, rapes.
So resources are going to low-level drug possession instead of solving violent crime in our communities.
It often works out that way, yeah. Because, frankly, drug possession arrests can be easier to make. There's sometimes funding tied to it, incentives.
Which really brings us to Christina Dent's own story. Because her background wasn't predisposed to this view, was it? Conservative, Christian, homeschooled.
Not at all. She held the view many people do. Drugs are bad, users are bad people, lock them up.
So what changed her mind so drastically?
It was personal experience, deeply personal. She became a foster parent.
Okay.
And she met Joanne. Joanne was the biological mother of Beckham, the little boy placed in dense care because of prenatal drug exposure. And meeting Joanne, seeing her love for her son, seeing her struggles with addiction, it just completely shattered Dent's stereotype.
She saw a person, a mother, not just an addict.
Exactly. She realized Joanne was trying despite facing immense challenges, and it led her to this this gut-wrenching conclusion that the war on drugs was really a war on people, a war on families, on communities.
And that made her question if the criminal justice system was even the right tool for the job.
Precisely. Was punishment the answer, or was something else needed?
So if the punishment model is failing, creating this harm, what is the alternative, this health-centered approach? What does that actually look like?
It's a fundamental shift. It moves away from punishment and towards public health. The priorities become, you know, saving lives, promoting health, keeping families strong, making communities safer.
And it involves things like decriminalization, maybe even legalization.
Yes, but it's crucial to understand why. It's not about saying drug use is good or okay. It's absolutely not.
It's about pragmatism. Reducing harm.
Exactly. It's a pragmatic strategy. It acknowledges drugs exist and asks, how can we manage them to cause the least amount of damage to individuals, families, and, you know, your community?
Okay, theory is one thing. Does this actually work anywhere? You mentioned Portugal earlier.
Portugal is the key case study, really. Back around 2001, they had a terrible heroin crisis. HIV rates through the roof, much worse than the U.S. opioid crisis now, relatively speaking.
So what did they do?
They did something incredibly bold. They decriminalized all drugs.
All of them.
Yeah.
Heroin, cocaine, everything.
For personal possession, yes. Small amounts. Very important distinction. Producing drugs, selling drugs, trafficking, still highly illegal. This was about stopping the criminalization of the user.
Okay, so they stopped arresting people for possession. What else?
This is the crucial part. They flipped their spending. Remember, the U.S. is 90% enforcement, 10% health.
They did the opposite.
Exactly the opposite. 90% went into health, prevention, treatment, harm reduction, social support. Only 10% on enforcement for the possession side.
So what kind of health stuff? Just treatment centers?
Much broader. It was about helping people build lives they actually wanted to live. Job support, housing assistance, reconnecting with family, community integration, making treatment accessible, easy to get, on demand.
And the results. After nearly two decades.
Pretty remarkable. Injection drug use cut almost in half. Overall drug addiction rates down by a third. Drug-related crime way down.
And overdoses. That's the big one now.
Dramatically lower. Their overdose death rate is something like 6 per million people. Ours in the U.S. is closer to 185 per million.
6 versus 185. That's huge.
It's just a staggering difference.
Okay, but when people hear decriminalization or legalization, there's immediate pushback, right? Fears of chaos, you know, society falling apart.
Absolutely. That's the number one fear. Won't this just lead to more drug use, more crime, chaos in the streets?
And what does the evidence say? Portugal seems to suggest no.
Portugal definitely suggests no, but it's important to be nuanced. Take Oregon, for example.
Hey.
They decriminalized, but initially they didn't have the robust public health and public order infrastructure fully in place.
What do you mean by public order?
Things like clear rules against using drugs in public, public intoxication, driving under the influence. Decriminalizing possession doesn't mean just letting anything go anywhere.
So the problem wasn't the decriminalization itself, but the lack of the support systems and clear public rules around it.
That seems to be the lesson, yes. It has to be part of a comprehensive strategy. And interestingly, in states that legalize marijuana, youth use often stays level or even goes down slightly.
Huh. Okay, what about the opioid crisis? People worry legalization makes that worse.
Well, Dent argues the opioid crisis now is primarily a crisis of contaminated black market drugs, especially fentanyl. It's not really driven by regulated prescription pills anymore.
So cracking down harder on prescriptions might actually backfire.
It seems to. It can push people who need pain management towards dangerous street drugs. And it undeniably harms chronic pain patients who lose access to medication they genuinely need. Some are driven to suicide, tragically.
That's a really tough balancing act. Okay, another objection. We shouldn't legislate morality, or maybe the opposite. The law should teach morality, and drugs are immoral.
Right. Dent tackles this head on. Is the criminal law always the right tool to teach every moral lesson?
She uses the Ten Commandments analogy, right?
Yeah. We only criminalize a couple of those, murder, theft. We don't arrest people for coveting or adultery, even if society disapproves. So there's already recognition that the law has limits.
What about tobacco? We didn't arrest smokers.
Exactly. We used education, public health campaigns, taxes, social pressure, and smoking rates plummeted. It shows you can discourage harmful behavior without resorting to mass criminalization. The focus, she argues, should be on reducing actual harm to people, families, communities, not just expressing moral disapproval through arrests.
Which ties into that idea of victimless crimes. Is simple drug possession really victimless?
It's complicated. Addiction certainly creates victims. Downstream families suffer, communities deal with related issues. But the act of possessing a small amount for personal use, it's often argued the immediate victim is, well, maybe the user themselves. But there isn't usually someone else directly harmed at that moment who calls the police, unlike, say, an assault.
And that lack of an immediate complaining victim affects policing.
It can. It can skew resources. As we said, it might be easier or there might be incentives to make drug possession arrests compared to solving complex violent crimes, where clearance rates are disturbingly low, around 50%.
So it all loops back to harm reduction and better resource use, which seems to be the core mission of End It For Good.
Precisely. Their goal is simple. A future where fewer people are harmed by drugs. Period.
And their strategy isn't just lobbying, it's education.
Primarily education. Talking to citizens, advocates, policymakers, trying to elevate solutions that prioritize life, health, families, community safety.
And focusing specifically on conservatives, Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to find common ground there.
Yeah, showing how this health-centered approach actually aligns with core values many conservatives hold dear.
Mm-hmm.
Protecting life, strengthening families, building communities where people can work and thrive. It's about finding pragmatic solutions.
So what's the main takeaway for someone listening to this? What's the call to action from Christina Dend?
Be curious. That's the name of her book, right? Be willing to question your own beliefs. Look at the evidence. Engage in civil conversation, even about tough topics.
It's not necessarily about demanding everyone support full legalization tomorrow.
Not at all. It's about understanding that a pragmatic shift towards harm reduction, towards health, could make a real positive difference in your own community. It's about, as she says, protecting life, helping people improve, strengthening families, building stronger communities. Practical stuff.
So, reflecting on this deep dive, it's clear the standard approach, the war on drugs, has had some really profound, maybe unintended negative consequences.
They're deeply damaging, yeah, for individuals, families, whole communities.
But the evidence we've discussed from people like Christina Dent, from places like Portugal, it suggests a shift from punishment to health, maybe judgment to compassion, could actually work better.
It really could lead to significantly better outcomes. So maybe the final thought to leave people with is this.
Go ahead.
What if we measured success differently? Not by arrest numbers or prison populations, but by lives rebuilt, by families kept whole, by communities becoming safer and healthier.
What are we potentially losing by sticking to a system that seems, by many measures, to be causing more harm than it prevents?
That's the question to ponder. Are we missing opportunities for healing, for growth, because we're stuck in an old way of thinking?
Powerful questions. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. And thank you for listening, for being curious enough to explore these ideas with us.
We hope you'll think about what you've heard and maybe consider what being part of the solution could look like where you live.